Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Joanna, from Pen to Paper, Haddon Heights, New Jersey. Nice.
Thank you. Wow. Hi, my name's Joanne McMenemy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joanne.
I haven't had a drink or any of its substitutes since May the 5th, 1984. That's a big deal because I like drinking. So, yeah, I know, right? Well, you know, it's the truth. But we were talking about that before the meeting, and I want to thank you all for being here and all your service and having this. Is a great meeting. I mean, this is just so nice. I was listening to some of the previous speakers, you know, before I came up here, and, you know, one of my home group meetings where I got sober had a speakers meeting on Saturday night, and, yeah. That's another story I'll tell you after the meeting. But it was a lot like this. And when Donna and I walked in the door, it was like walking into that meeting. You could smell the coffee, and we could hear people talking and laughing. And it's nice. It's just really good. It's like coming home again, which is not something I would have said when I got here. You know, I wasn't one of those people that got to AA, and the doors opened up, and I'm home. And I would have rather pulled my eyelashes out with rusty tweezers. You know, it's not for me. You know, I'm mentally ill, and I came by that honestly. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And if you think I'm a problem drinking, you should see me sober. Because trust me, drinking makes you manageable. You know, and some of its substitutes really help with my drinking, because drinking is reliable. I know what I'm getting when I twist off. There is no quality control with the other stuff out there, but drinking works for me. So I heard one of the old-timers say that he ended up in AA through a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings, and I was like, yes, that summed it up, you know, and I thought that's how I got here, too. And I found out I got here because God has a weird sense of humor. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So when I came in the door and, you know, we smelled the coffee and we heard people laughing and we've seen how many other speakers have been before, you know, I had to giggle to myself because I thought I have to be honest and say, yeah, it was. It was like getting home again. Ugh. You know, and I know Bill Mulford, you know, God rest his soul, who raised me here is laughing because he, I swore I'd never say that, and there it is. I came into AA against my will, kicking, screaming, saying things that don't need to be said. I didn't need to be here. I had problem drinking. We were laughing about this, too. You know, it says, describe in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like was I had a great time. I was having a blast. I was doing my thing. You know, the first time I drank was the summer of eighth grade. My mother was having, like, a little episode at home. And, you know, some furniture was trying to be going out the living room window. And, you know, she didn't need my help, so I left. You know, and, you know, I got to the playground, and my friends were drinking. And straight Steve and I, we were the only two people that weren't drinking and doing whatever else they were doing. And that's because I was a designated driver, by the way. Don't have a driver's license. That's another story for after the meeting if you're interested. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, somebody passed something to me, and instead of passing that cord on, I just, and then somebody passed something to me, and instead of passing that on, I just, and all of a sudden, I didn't care whether she succeeded in getting that stuff out the window or not. And I didn't care what I was walking into when I got home. I just didn't care, you know, and life just got instantly better. Here we go. I'm on. It's on. And from that day forward, I knew what the solution was for me. I knew what made you manageable. I knew what made things run smoother for me. I also knew that drinking worked every single time. The substitutes, not so much. So, you know, we were laughing, you know, so, you know, what happened? Well, like, drinking works for me until I turned 15, you know, and then not so much. You know, I got in a little bit of trouble, you know, the kind that you can't wiggle your way out of. I got locked up a lot as a teenager. The Philadelphia cops have a very odd sense of humor. You know, they knock you around a little bit and leave you off in a weird part of town, you know, and then, you, right? And then if you get home, great. If you don't get home, too bad. You know, they also weren't a fan of calling my mom, because my mom's thing was she figured out how to get in, she'll figure out how to get out, click. You know, she never taught me to behave the way I was behaving, so she wasn't going to be a party to it. You know, and if she was in a mood, she'd come pick me up, and then she would start a scene in the police department, so they didn't want to deal with her either. You know, they had to have a really good reason for picking me up and getting her out at night, you know, so they didn't want to deal with her either. But this time I couldn't get out of it. This was pretty serious, and we got free legal advice, which said take her to a rehab for offenders. And then when she goes before the judge, you say, well, you know, she's got a problem, and that's why she's behaving like this, and she's in rehab now. Well, they were the only, you know, I was the only person they had ever had under the age of 20-something. I was 15, and I was a little wild, let's just say. I had a temper. I was like Patty Hearst as a teenager is what they used to call me. And it didn't go so well at rehab for me. You know, the director of the rehab thought sexually assaulting me would get me well. If that was the truth, I'd have 40-some-odd years, and I don't. You know, here's a mode of therapy that doesn't work well for me. What happened to me, our literature talks about these violent emotional twists that shape our perception of people in the world around us. That would be me. And that's when it changed for me. That's when it wasn't so much crossing the line, it was like being hung by the line. You know, I no longer was drinking and doing what I was doing because it was fun. I was drinking and doing what I was doing because I was going to take somebody's life if I didn't. You know, I learned to leave me. You know, Elvis and I had left the building. You know, you could do whatever you wanted to the show. I'm not here. You know, he and his wife were going to West Virginia, and they were going back to college, and they convinced my mom that they could get me into university, and so my mother signed me over, and off to West Virginia I went, and I lived like that. And I'm here to tell you that you can drink yourself blind. You can be blind drunk. I've done it. You know, and this is the kind of person I am. I was blind, and I waited for it to come back, and it didn't appear to be coming back, and I thought, well, blind people drink. So I just kept drinking, you know, and I was quite surprised when I woke up in the morning and my vision was back. It was like, yes, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, at that point, I'm 16. What do I have to lose? There's nothing left to do to me except kill me. You know, there's nothing left. And I'm 16. My mother had been suicidal since I was in eighth grade. I came home. Don't take a Greyhound bus home from West Virginia if you're drinking. Not recommend it. Just saying. I took the Greyhound bus home at Christmas and found out that I no longer lived in West Virginia. I was taking care of my mom because she couldn't live by herself. I slept on the couch. I went to high school. Blah, blah, blah. Finished out of Philadelphia. There went my college career. I was no longer going to West Virginia University. So I had done my time living in that situation with the only thing getting me going was, it's almost over, it's almost over, I'll be living in a dorm soon, and gone. I was not happy about that, but what are you going to do, right? I lived out of a couple trash bags. My mom really wasn't keen on having me there for a lot of reasons, all of them good, by the way. You know, and you just do what you do. You know, and what I do is I leave the house to go to Wildwood for senior week and come to on a Sunshine Airways plane, sitting next to some guy reading porn with a stewardess mixing drinks out of a fifth, and look out the window and you can see the waves rippling. It's flying so low it's probably illegal. And then the next thing I remember is my boyfriend, soon-to-be husband, diving into the shallow end of the pool, splitting his head open, and we had a group conscience meeting and decided that we didn't want to sit in the ER, so I stitched him up and we went to the bar. Everybody thinks I'm in Wildwood. I'm in Key West. You know, this is what I do when I'm drinking. My sister, yeah, it's funny now, yeah? It wasn't funny then. My sister's calling around looking for me. She's calling the hotels. Then she starts calling the rooming houses. Then she starts calling the police stations. Then she starts calling hospitals. Then she starts calling morgues. But we don't hurt anybody, right? It's just me. My sister's the only person that was ever constant in my life, and she's still in my life today. I'm a blessed woman. But I don't hurt anybody. It's just me. I'm just drinking. I'm just doing my thing. You know, I almost got married in Key West, and thank you, God, you know, or my best man came too, and said, don't sign that. It's indictable. You're not allowed out of the city of Philadelphia, and I didn't. But I decided to have a child, live happily ever after. I'm a rocket to stardom. Are you getting that? And, you know, and it's a good thing that that happened, because the delusion for me was really driven home at that point. You know, I came to the conclusion that I didn't have a problem because I stopped drinking immediately. and I stayed stopped. And the other reason that was important to me was because she was the only non-negotiable person in my life. Everybody else, I don't care if you're here. I knew my sister would leave me sooner or later, so that was kind of a moot point. But if you're here, you're here. If you're going, you're going. All right? Who cares? You know, just the way it is. And so I have this child. Life goes on. I get a great job in a mental hospital. I fit right in. You know, the funding dried out, and I got a job down on South Street in Philly. And you know what? The gates of heaven opened up for me. You know, I made a lot of money legally now. You know, she went to the right schools. We lived in the right neighborhood. I mean, I was like living two different lives. When I was at home, I was Susie Homemaker on the block, you know. I had the garden and the dog, and well, somebody stole my dog, but that's another story for after the meeting. And then I would go to work. Now, I only drank at work. I don't drink at home because I'm a good mother. But like Dr. Bob talks about, I got a little something to hold me over at home because I have an unpredictable temper, so I can't be just drinking. You know, I could be drinking and everything's going great. Next thing you know, you and I are fist fighting because who knows why. You'll have to tell me about that later. You know, I have a little, all that violent emotional twist we were talking about. I'm still twisted. I don't have any spiritual tools. I don't have a solution. God and I are not on a first name basis. So I have not been untwisted. I'm just getting twisted tighter and tighter and tighter. You know, and I don't know that I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. I think I'm just fine. I look great. I live in the right neighborhood. My daughter goes to a private school. I'm making money. What do you want from me? Leave me alone. You know, I meet this guy, love of my life. He says, you got to do something about your drink. And I say, you got to go. And he did. Oops. You know, so I got another one. Nothing personal, but, you know, gentlemen, but, you know, just get another one. And, you know, and he was weird. You know, he didn't drink and he didn't do anything. No substitutes, and but you know what? It's none of his business what I do. He doesn't pay my bills. And one thing led to another, and we fell in love and decided to live happily ever after, which was kind of weird. And so I moved in with him in Maple Shade, New Jersey, which for a city girl is like the dark side of the moon. You can't even get a bus in Maple Shade. It's ridiculous. And I don't have a car. I came to driving a pickup truck. It was empty. I didn't know if it was stolen or not. I don't own a pickup truck. I don't have a driver's license. And it turns out that I had moved. I mean, I knew I was going to move. I remember packing. I just didn't remember actually choosing to move that day. You know, I had moved into his apartment with my daughter, and my friend was a little freaked out. And very soon after that, we started having the conversation. You want to do something about your drinking? And I said, sure, yeah. What I meant was, I want to do something about you bothering me about my drinking. And then I was introduced to AA. Yeah, no. No. I've been in group therapy. I'm really good at it. I was actually asked to leave group therapy because I could take the counselor apart. You know, this is not for me. I'm so glad this works for you. I'm so happy for you. But this is not what's wrong with me. I'm one of those people that are mentally ill that it talks about. I'm the constitutionally incapable person. If I'm talking to you, I'm lying, and I'm okay with that. I don't care enough about you to tell you the truth. I just don't care. So I used to smoke pot and go to the meetings. It made them easier to sit through. And I wasn't allowed to have the car, so that plan ran out real fast. And I was in a meeting one day, and I must have said something incredibly inappropriate, and this old guy, Bill Mulford, said to me, stop talking. Just stop talking. We don't want what you have. You know, it says if you want what we have, and you don't know what we have because you don't do what we do. And he gave me this book, this actual book, and told me to take it home and read it and follow the instructions. And if it didn't work for me, I could come back to the meeting, and I could put money in the basket. And then I could say almost anything I wanted. But in the meantime, I was wasting their time. And there are people here who are saving and changing their lives. And I could either get on board or just go drink. And I thought, you're a Quaker. You're supposed to be nicer to me. And I'm a newcomer. You're supposed to give me that whole, like, you know, your life is going to change and everything's great. He said, stop. Just stop. Stop. You're dying of untreated alcoholism. Either do something about it or don't. But don't waste our time. Well, you know, and I wasn't really all that happy. Note to self, don't sit next to Bill. You know, that's all I got out of that, you know, and yeah, so I had a little incident, you know, and because I wasn't obviously done, and my sister, who's the most serious person I ever met Still, I'm 55, she's 57, trust me on this, not to be toyed with, gave me the ultimatum. If you want to drink, go drink, but your daughter stays with me. And that's it, I'm done drinking. My daughter is the only non-negotiable person in my life. I'm done drinking, and I'm done drinking because I just said I'm done drinking. And about a week later, 2 weeks later, I went out for lunch with a friend of mine, and she ordered 2 Tingdao beers, and I sat down, I'll never forget it. I was eating, I'll tell you what I was eating. I picked up the beer and I drank it. And by the time I was finished, I had also used one of the substitutes so I didn't appear to be as drunk as I was almost deaf. It was like being underwater. I called the cocaine hotline to find out how long I was going to be deaf, because you need to know that kind of stuff. You know, I have to come up with a plan so people don't understand that I can't hear them. You know, I picked a fight with my soon-to-be husband so he wouldn't talk to me. That way, I didn't have to worry about not being able to hear him. This is my plan, you know. But I don't have a problem. You know, I'm doing fine, you know. And I remember that old guy with the book. And I decided that I'm going to go do this. I'm going to read this, right? And I'm going to follow the instructions, because it's an instruction. It says here in here, like, this is an instruction. It shows precisely how we have recovered. Oh, please. Whatever. I'm going to get the book. I'm going to follow the instructions. That way, when I hand my daughter over, I can do it with a clear conscience. Because this is not going to work. I mean, these guys are dead. What do they know about what's happening to me today? Whatever. So I got the book, and I'm sleeping on the couch. You know the deal. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't presume that. And I start reading it, and I don't like Bill. I just don't like him. I don't know why. I just don't. You know, there's something about Bill that just didn't work for me, you know. But I flipped to the back because I remember being told to read Dr. Bob's story. And the miracle happened for me. It was a really horrible nightmare, this earning money, getting liquor, smuggling at home, getting drunk, morning jitters, taking large doses of sedatives to make it possible for me to earn more money, and so on, ad nauseum. I used to promise my wife, my friends, and my children that I would drink no more, promises which seldom kept me sober, even through the day, though I was very sincere when I made them. And I knew immediately. It was like God just, hello, fool. Anytime I put anything in my body, I was doomed. I'm doomed. I can't put one thing in and not the other, half of this, a little bit of that, some of this. Doomed. The miracle happened for me. I'm Dr. Bob's girl. You know, like, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just a pothead. Really? How's that working for you? You know, yeah, I'm Dr. Bob's girl, you know, and that loophole that I'm different snapshot, you know. So I went back and I skipped over Bill and I started reading, and I kept reading, and I kept reading, and I didn't like a whole lot, you know. It's not surprising our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. Ah, cheap shot. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every enjoy? Why couldn't it say control or enjoy? You know, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. You know, I'm thinking, really? So I did the whole, like, Evelyn Wood speed reading thing. You know, I went through this. But I did. I went through it, and I read it, and it was making me crazier than I already was, which is really scary. Because I was out there. And then I did the inventory, which was very easy. Like, if I knew you, I don't know, a week, you're probably on the list. You know, fear, losing my daughter, cops, guns, and judges, in that order. amends? I don't owe anybody anything. You saw me coming. You knew what you got when you signed up. Too bad. You probably owed me. And I'll tell you what, if you stay away, I don't need to collect. Let's just call it a draw. So my amends list was very, very brief. I wasn't going looking for anybody, and hopefully nobody was coming looking for me. You know, admit to another person, yeah, I'm going to pass on that one. You know, and then I realized, hold on a second. A woman that I used to live with and do exceptionally bad things with was sober. I'll tell her, because I know a lot about her. So if she starts gossiping, I can clean her clock quick. I'll tell her. So I got that one covered. And prayer and meditation, I won't repeat from the podium the prayer that I said, because I know better today. I'm a woman of grace and dignity today. So I gave God the ultimatum. Let's just put it that way. Either do something about this or else I'm handing my daughter over. I'm out of here. I'll go die somewhere else. I'm not doing this. And I got up the next day, and I was very, very, very sick. I mean, I threw up things I did in my past life. You know, it was rough. And Monday morning, I'm standing in the bank, and I realized that I haven't had a drink. And I don't have a plan. And I don't believe in God. I don't. Actually, it's not that I don't believe. I just don't care. So, yeah. What is... Oh, no. Like, if this thing actually worked, oh, no. Like, it didn't seal the deal. It actually creeped me out. So I went to the meeting, and I told this old guy, Bill, what happened. He was like, no kidding. Like, what do you think we've been telling you all this time? This works better when you're not high or drunk. So, and I'm like, well, you know, other people slip. And he said, no. It's not a slip unless you intended to get sober, which you never had the intent to get sober. Anything you do forward from here has intent behind it. And, you know, I've been blessed not to have to do that moving forward from there. You know, whatever Bill told me to do, I did. If, you know, and I mean, if he would have gave me the robe and the flowers, I'd have been out on the corner. You know, if he would have said, shave your head, I'd have shaved her head. You know, I don't care. Whatever Bill told me to do, I did it. You know, I had every AA job you can think of. I went to a meeting and had the misfortune to complain to Bill about a big book meeting where they were not using the big book. Guess who had to join that group and go to that meeting? You know, like, I had every job, and I don't care. Bill told me to do it. I did it. You know, he saved my life. He taught me how to be a woman of grace and dignity. And he taught me how to be somebody's mom. You know, and he had a really good sense of humor. He would tell me to read things until you know why it applies to you. And I'd say, well, just tell me. And he'd say, no, you'll want to argue with me why I'm wrong, and I don't feel like it. I'm going to go home and sleep good tonight. You, not so much. You know? So do it or don't do it. I don't care. One of the things I had to read was the alcoholic is the extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. We must be rid of the selfishness or it kills us. I can still recite it. And I can tell you, it was like dropping a penny in a can the day that one hit home. I don't live like that anymore. I just don't live like that anymore. I'm not the extreme example of self-will run riot anymore. I'm a free woman today. I can do anything and go anywhere. And it's this plan that I was given. I didn't pay for this. He gave this to me, you know, and I offered to pay for it. And he said, no, he kind of liked me owing him. You know, I don't know if that's, I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but I have to confess that I've actually done that to women I sponsor. You can get a lot out of somebody for $6, you know, just saying, you know, and I'm not above it either. Don't get me wrong. You know, whatever I got to do, you know, I'll do it. So, you know, I stayed here because I didn't want to lose my daughter in the beginning. And then I started to become the mother that I wanted to be. And then I started to become the woman that I was afraid I would never be, you know, and then I stayed here for me. So, you know, I hear people say all the time, like, you can't get sober for somebody else. And I'm here to tell you, I did. I stayed for me, but I got here for her. If I didn't have that child, I'd be incarcerated or institutionalized. I'm not the kind of person that dies. I'm going to live, this is another thing Bill told me, you know, I'm going to live a long, tortured existence. You know, I'm not one of those people that drinks and dies. I'm one of those people that lives a long time, you know, and ooh, the thought of that would make my skin crawl, you know, so I don't need to live like that anymore. You know, I got really involved in service work. He gave me jobs. I did them. We had a woman's meeting. I used to have to greet people and say, you know, we have a woman's meeting. Could really use your support. And I'd be thinking, don't do it. It's a cat box. They're all crazy. You know, but I didn't say that. And that meeting's still going today. You know, I started a meeting. You know, I actually went to them and had them start a step meeting because I could no longer go to my home group step meeting because I had to go to work. And I needed a step meeting. It's all about me, you know, and that meeting's still going today. Because Bill's like, if you need a meeting, get busy, get a coffee pot, find a room. Like, can't I just pick a different meeting? And he's like, no, that's not how it works. Somebody else needs a meeting too, you know, and the book talks about that. It talks about finding a place where people need a meeting and providing that. Why should I just go to somebody else's meeting? What's wrong with me doing a little bit of work? And I'm like, well, I'm already working. He's like, well, not what we're doing. You know, and so this was my life. This is what I did. You know, I had a kid in sobriety. She's never seen me drunk. She's seen me a little crazy, but she's never seen me drunk. That child I almost lost is in her 36 now. She's had two children, and I've been at the birth of both of them. My youngest child I had in sobriety, she had a little boy. I've been at the birth of her child as well. You know, that AA marriage didn't last, whatever. You know, about 6 months after that marriage, well, I should back up a little bit. My mother ultimately did kill herself when I was 2 years sober. And the reason that that's really important is because it's the only time that I thought drinking was the solution for me. I did not know how to manage that kind of pain. And I went to where I used to work, and I got a bottle of my favorite poison. And I got in the car, and I couldn't drive. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't swallow saliva. And I called my sister, and I said, I'm running late, you know. And when I told her where I was, she, like, panicked. And I drove up to my sister's, you know, where my sister was. And I don't remember driving there. I couldn't breathe. I gave the bottle and everything else back because I couldn't. I never even could open it. I couldn't get it together. And I got to my sister's house, and then we went to my mom's. And I couldn't. I mean, I'm a pothead, you know, I used to be. And I couldn't get matches going. You know, I could do nothing. I couldn't even drive myself home. Somebody had to drive me home, put me to bed, you know. And Bill asked me what happened, and I told him. He said, well, what was different from this day from any other day? And I said, well, I asked God don't let anything bad happen to me. And he was like, well, you know, when you figure out that drugs and booze are bad for you, this is going to get a lot easier, you know. And then he laughed at me, which he laughed a lot, you know. And I understood then something that I didn't really get before, which was that it's not about drinking. I mean, they told me that all the time, but I didn't get it. It's not about drinking. If I could just stop drinking and everything was okay, I'd have been fine after I had my daughter. Just not drinking is just not enough. You know, and in that instant, I understood what Bill had been trying to tell me. You know, like God did for me what I could not do for myself, but God will not do for me what I will not do for myself. You know, and Bill brought me up to understand that God does not keep me sober. God gives me everything I need to stay sober, and it's my responsibility to do something with that every day. So every day I got to get up and I got to ask God to give me what I need to stay sober. First, the book says you ask God, what would you have me be? All right, well, I'm going to be a woman of grace and dignity. Well, that lets drinking out because the odds of me being graceful and having any kind of dignity when I'm drinking are slim to none. You know, so I get up every morning and I ask God, what would you have me be? And God, you know, says, how about grace and dignity? Because, God, that takes a lot off my list because when you're drinking, you know. And so when I was 2 years sober, Bill taught me that lesson, you know, and I was, my sister-in-law a couple weeks later asked me if I wanted to go away for the weekend. And I said, well, yeah, yes. And she took me on retreat and left me there. It was horrifying. It was like, oh, my God, everybody's worst nightmare, right? Just took me on retreat and left me there. She went off with her friends, and I was like, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and, God. And I don't know the woman that was my roommate. I wouldn't know her if she was sitting in the room. And she asked me how you were doing. How you doing, honey? And I told her the truth. She said, hold that thought. And she went and got a yellow pad and pen, and she took my inventory for me. She listened to what I had to say, and she wrote down recurring things. And when we were done, we came up with a plan of action. And that woman in Bill taught me how to do my sixth step. So for me, I know that I'm entirely ready to have God remove my shortcomings when I have a plan of action of what I'm going to put in their place. So here's my defects of character, and here's where I really would like to live, and here's the plan of action I have to get rid of them. Because that's what she had me do. Well, if you weren't having all this insanity, what would it look like? And I said, well, I would be doing this and this. Well, why don't we do that instead? Oh. Okay, can you commit to this? Yes. Are you willing to show this plan of action to your sponsor and your friends so you have backup and help? Yes. Okay, why don't you sleep on that and we'll talk about it tomorrow? And I slept on it, I got up the next day. You're still willing to commit to that? Yes, I am. So for me, when I do a sixth step today, I still do that. You know, I have my plan of action. This is what I'm willing to do to change. I don't change. I create an environment in which change takes place and God changes me. And the environment for me is that commitment to what I'm willing to do differently. You know, I heard a speaker say that, and it made so much sense to me. It made me feel so much better because I used to feel responsible for changing things, and I can't do that. If I could do that, I would have done it when I was 15 years old. I wouldn't be standing here with you. I'd have a normal life that lets me sleep in on cold nights. You know what I'm saying? But I love my life. You know, and that little thing that happened, you know, when I was 2.5 years sober is the foundation that has saved my life from that day to this. You know, life goes on. My marriage ended, and, you know, thank you God my marriage ended. You know, it wasn't working out for anybody. But 6 months later, I was almost beaten to death during a robbery, and I shot and killed my assailant. You know, I got on my hands and knees, and I begged God for that man's life. And when they told me that he was dead, I was done. Any guy that thinks I need this experience, I want no parts of. You know, I'm just done. Sorry, I've done everything you've asked me to do for 13 years. I've suit up, show up, do it all, done. And it's nowhere near as organized as it looks on TV. It is a flat-out dog and pony show, you know, and I'm the pony, you know, and I wasn't liking it. And this paramedic, poor guy, he comes up to me and he says, like, you're severely injured and you're going to the shop. I need to treat you. And I said, I'm an addict and I'm an alcoholic. I'm in the bar business, by the way, folks, for 13 years staying sober. Doing a lot of really good service down there. So when the book says that you can stay, live on the firing line of life and God will keep you safe from harm, I'm here to tell you that happens. I have taken children out of crack houses. I have gotten people into rehabs. I have had families restored. People used to see my car parked there that used to have to go into the city, and they were afraid, and they would see my car, and they would know that they could stop in. I would throw somebody behind a bar. We would go in my office, and we'd have a little, like, get your head on straight. What do you got to do? Where do you got to go? Ready, 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 go! You know, and then they would go do their thing, and then on the way back, they'd see my car, and they'd come in. All right, I made it, I did it. It's like plane, like jailbreak, you know, and there's home plate, you know, and it was a safe haven. You know, people knew I was sober. They brought their kids to me. They brought their husbands and spouses to me. I was like, you know, where are you going to go? Well, you call her. She's sober. And you'd be amazed what you can do when you live on the firing line of life. You know, and that's why I was there, you know, and it worked out for me because somebody heard that call go out over the radio and the paramedic was getting ready to treat me, and I said, you know, you're going to be zipping me up in a bag. If you give me something now, I'm never going back to it. I was godless, I thought. The reality for us is that God is within. I can no more be godless than I can function without a heart in my chest. I'm such a dweeb sometimes. But, you know, and he just looked at me like, I don't have an answer for that. They don't teach you a response to that in paramedic school. I'll be right back. You know, and he left. He was like, what? You know, and he came back with a bigger paramedic. You know, and I'm watching them walk across the room, and I'm thinking, they're going to treat me like they're going to decide I can't make a sane decision, and they're going to treat me, and this is not going to go my way. And God provides no matter what. You know, whether I like it or I understand it or I know it, God provides. Because a friend of mine heard that call go out over the radio. He's a cop, and he showed up, and he stood in front of them, and it was all blue, big guy. And he says, I'll bring her to the ER when she drops. You know, God does for me what I cannot do for myself. You know, my neck was broken. I lost everything, lost my house, lost my business, blah, blah, blah. My sister goes out on happy hour. Here's my sister, Terry. She got so drunk one night. She was hanging over the bath, you know, doing the wine thing. I'm going to leave it at that. And she looks up and says to me, I will never be this sick or drunk on wine again. And I went, sure. She never has. That was 35 years ago. Right? So Terry's not a big party person. So she goes out one night and she runs into a girl who works for a neurosurgeon, and the woman says, hey, how's Joanne doing? And Terry told her, and she said, give me her medical records. And her boss fixed my neck, knowing that he would not get paid. I can do this today because God provides. I would never have seen that guy. I would not have been able to get in to see that guy. I didn't have the resources. I lost everything, you know, but God provides. You know, I taught my kids about forgiveness and love and just whatever you got to do to restore whatever you can, you know, and I did whatever amends were given to me to do for that, you know, and it took a year before I was cleared. That was a lot to carry around, and but the thing is, you just suit up and show up. I had AA commitments that I kept because, well, some of them I kept because nobody else would take them, you know, but I kept them because that's what you do, you know. I had to stand up through meetings for the first 3 or 4 months I couldn't sit, you know. You just do what we do. There's no reason for me to stop doing what saved my life. I'm not forfeiting my life for anything. I'm not going back for anybody. You know, I'm one of these people the book talks about that is recovered. I'm a free woman today. I will never drink again. I will never do drugs again. The book says that if I do a few simple things every day, I don't have to. I have a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. I needed a new spiritual condition at that point in my life, and I got one. God gave it to me. I got it through my children. I watch my kids return to normal. I watch them get back to not being afraid all the time. I watch doctors come in that I didn't have the access to. I got a job, you know, 30 days before bankrupt was the only option I had. I had that job for 10 years before my body gave out. You know, I watched things, I just did what I was taught to do by that old Quaker guy who drove me up the wall half the time. You know, and the atheist Eddie guy who raised me here, I just did what I was taught to do, right foot, left, yay, waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know, Bill told me, turn your will and your life over to care of God. And I said, well, how do you do that? Oh, just turn it over. How do you do that? I don't know. That's what people. And then I asked Bill, how do you do that? He said, your will is your life, and your will are your attitudes, and your life are your actions. Change your attitude, change your actions. I can do that. I can do that. And I change those things, and God makes it possible for me to live the life I want to be living today. And I get up every day and decide, how do I want to live today? I want to live like a woman of grace and dignity. I want to continue to be free. And guess what? I am. And I have to do a few simple things every day. Dr. Bob talks about those things. You know, he talks about why we do that. I have a sense of duty. It's a pleasure. Because in doing so, I am paying a debt to the man who took the time to pass it on to me. Because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. I don't worry about a possible slip anymore. I'm not going to get struck drunk. It's just not going to happen. You know, I'd have to make a conscious decision to do that. And guess what I found out? I'm not mentally ill. I'm no crazier than anybody else in this room. I fit right in. I'm all right with that. You know, I know what the solution is. Don't get me wrong. I've had a lot of professional help. I have bought shore homes for people. I ain't living in them, and I'm okay with that. I will do anything not to be soul sick again. Anything. And when he says to me, what are you willing to do? If the answer isn't anything, I can't help you. Because I only know one thing that works. And if it's not all, it's nothing. You know, I have women who call me, oh, I really, can you sponsor me? Well, honey, you might want to sleep on that. Because I only know one thing that works. And if you want to do something else, this isn't going to work out. But you can call me. You know, and I had the greatest compliment given to me like 2 years ago. I had this girl call me and she said, I was thinking about killing myself or drinking. And somebody said, why don't you call Joanne first? So I have fallen into the category of sponsors of last resort. And I think that's fabulous. You know, like if you've tried everything else and it's not working for you, why don't you do this? You know, I thought it was great. I'm like, well, good for you, honey. And she's still sober. Good. You better be sure, you know, because I don't know about anybody else, but I'll bet my life on what's in this book. I'll bet your life on what's in this book, you know, and I'm okay with that. It's working for me. It's been working for me. There are so many promises in this book. I would wish I could just read them all, you know, but that would take up too much time. This is the same book that Bill gave me. You know, all that time. I only gave it away one time on a 12-step call. And I clearly remember walking in my car thinking, he better use that book. He better use it every day like I do. You know, and I was really sad when I got the book back. You know, but you never know. You never know. Maybe it's just gnawing on him and he'll show up. You know, I got married 7 years ago to a guy who's not in the program. He doesn't even change personalities when he drinks. I don't get that. Like, why bother? You know, I just don't get that. It's like a waste. But anyway, you know, the important thing, I know, that's terrible, but he, you know, he doesn't. But the important thing about him is he knows that this comes before everything. This is more important than my husband. It's more important than my children. It's more important than a job. It's more important than everything. This is my foundation for living. I do. This is what I do. This is who I am. I have. Since we've been married, we've had 2 or 3 people live in our house. You know, that's what was going on when I met him. It's not going to change. You know, I have commitments. I have certain number. I go to 3 meetings a week. You know, this is the way it is. We could be in the middle of dinner and the phone rings and I look at it and it's like, oh, gotta go. You know, and that's just the way it is. And if he's got a problem with that, and we've had this conversation, we'll make certain concessions, we'll work around it. But if it ever gets to either or, you got to go. Because I'm not dying for anybody. I'm not laying down and dying for anybody. There is nothing going on out there willing for me to get soul sick over. Just not. And it's not a selfish thing. I can't help anybody if I don't put my oxygen mask off first. You cannot give what you have not got. Be sure your own house is in order. My house has to stay in order. And in order for me to do that, I have to continue to do the same things that I've been taught to do. I started a meeting with two friends of mine. I don't know how many years ago now. It's written in here somewhere. All kinds of stuff is written in here. It's probably been 14 years now. We were both taking newcomers through the steps, and we thought, this will be a hoot. Let's do it all together. We'll just throw them all in the room, see what happens. You know, and it outgrew my living room, so we put it into her living room, and it outgrew her living room. It outgrew three more living rooms, and now we're in a church. We need two rooms to do it. It's called the Pen to Paper. If you're ready to put pen to paper, come see us. It's an hour's drive. Really be sure you're ready, ladies. So we have a big book meeting in the front. And when we get to how it works, the room separates, and the women who are ready to do steps go into the back room, and we shut the door. And it doesn't matter if it takes 3 months to get through it. It doesn't matter. Whatever it takes, we could be reading, and halfway through a page, hold, please. It says, you know, this is the first step in recovery. Delusion that we are like other people or presently be has to be smashed. You know what? I'm not buying that. And it doesn't matter if the rest of the meeting is about that sentence. The rest of the meeting is about that sentence. Everybody needs to be on the same page. And then we go on. And that's how we read the big book in that meeting. And that's how we get through the steps in that meeting. And you know what? That's been going on for 14 years. And it's working. There's a need for it. And that's what we do. And so I go through that, you know, probably once a year with that group. But I go through that cycle with my sponsor. I call my sponsor, and I'll tell you, I know what she's going to say before I call her. Thank you, God. My stepson stole my car and, like, blew out a tire and whatever. No big deal. Nobody got hurt. And I called her up, and I was really upset. And she's like, thank you, God, you have a car. Thank you, God, nobody got hurt. Thank you, God, you have insurance. I know what her answer is going to be. Thank you, God, is the answer to everything. And she's right. It is. Thank you, God. You know, it's all small stuff. And that's why she's my sponsor, because I'll forget that. And I'll think, he's got to go. You know, he's just got to go. He's a little too disruptive to my quiet world. Seriously? At his age, I had just gotten finished, like, thinking about fighting in bars. He is, like, light years ahead of me. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not really excited about some of the stuff that he does, but he is still light years ahead of me. You know, I didn't get to college till I was in my 30s, and I think they let me in because they were freaked out because they asked me, why do you look so bad on paper, and I told them the truth. They were like, wow, nobody tells the truth, but it's, you know, I did good. But anyway, you know, her answer to everything is thank you, God. Thank you, God. I don't really have any problems today. You know, the problems I have today are luxury problems. You know, I'm blessed today. I don't need a drink today. I don't need any of its substitutes today. I'm a free woman today. If you're not having the experience I'm having, you're cheating yourself. If you're not having the experience I'm having, get the book, get busy. If you are having the experience I'm having and you're not teaching it to somebody else, you're cheating them. That's just how I was brought up here. And I don't cheat people anymore. I don't steal anymore. I don't lie about things that are important anymore. And this is important. This is life and death. You know, so what I do here is not just because it makes me happy. I do it here because it's important and it was freely given to me. And I have to give it back. Otherwise, it just starts to fall apart. I start to think crazy things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not getting ready to ascend by any stretch of the imagination. I have days when I seriously could watch it burn in the rearview mirror while I'm just driving away, you know, with my cats in the back. I'm okay with that. You know, like, I'm okay. I'm a work in progress, and I know what I need to do. I follow the instructions, and thank you, God, they haven't changed. Because I'm too old to learn a whole new way of living. This way works for me. I'm a pleasure principle kind of girl. That's how I got into all the trouble I got into. You know, And this makes me happy. In here, where I live with myself, I have a sense of peace and ease that doesn't leave no matter what's going on. Things are going badly. My husband just buried his nephew because he can just drink and smoke pot until he wasn't. Overshot the mark a little, you know, with his 2-year-old and his 4-year-old daughter sleeping in the other room. His mom finds him. It happens, you know. I was blessed to be able to explain to that family, this is a terminal illness. This is a disease. And left untreated, you will die. It's a disease. You wouldn't be angry with him if he died from cancer. A little compassion goes a long way, folks. You know, and they're looking at me like, no blame. There's no reason for that. You know, I have that view of this because I live this way. And not everybody gets this. So if you got it, you're blessed. I believe. I'm blessed. I'll speak for me. I have a responsibility, a moral and spiritual obligation to pass this on to the next person. What they do with that is between them and their God. It's none of my business once I pass it on. You know, but it is my business to do that. I love my life. I used to want to be John Dillinger's girlfriend, Doc Holliday's girlfriend. She lived in hotels. She had beautiful clothes. She didn't have to cook or clean, and he shot people that upset her. I thought that sounded fabulous. You know, I don't want to be anybody else, anywhere else, having any other experience other than the one I'm having today. I love my life. I just do. You know, and I'm not going to change anything. What I'm doing is working for me. It's been working for me for a long time. In good or bad, it's working for my family, it's working for the people around me, it's working for people I don't even know. Trust me, on a bad day in traffic, it's a good thing that I live this way. You know? I love that you keep your tapes up online. When I'm in my car more than a half an hour, I put speaker tape in. I get the voice of reason because my problem center's in my mind. I need to stay out of my mind if I want to stay happy. You know, and I'm happy, joyous, and free today. And I'm not going back for anybody else, and you don't have to either. You know, it's a daily reprieve, but I only get a day anyway. You know, I could have, who cares? I know what I need to do to stay free, and I do it, and it's easy. It's effortless now. It's just who I am. Just like drinking became effortless, it's just what I did. This is what I do now. You know, and I love it. And I'm going to guess that if you just stick with it long enough, you'll be okay too. The miracle is not right around the corner. It's not. You're not 5 minutes away from success. If you're clean, if you're detoxed, if you're sober, it's already happened. It's happening right here, right now. It's not coming. It's right here, right now. Doesn't matter where you got it, whether you're under the bed barking like a fox or the $30,000 a day, it doesn't matter. If you're done, you're here. It's time. It's your turn. You know, run with it and then give it away. It's awesome to watch people's lives change. It's just fascinating. It's a lot of fun, too. I love my life. So God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Freely give what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you till then. Thanks for having me.